The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hi, I am Avra Lewis for the North Carolina Reading Service, and for the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Essence Magazine.
The first article is titled, Meet Foliki Olowofoyiku, star of America's first sitcom featuring a Nigerian family. Let me ask a question. If where you lived or the environment that you were in was limiting, maybe even toxic, and not just for you but for your entire family and those who you loved, and there was absolutely nothing that you could do to change it, what would you do? It's not far-fetched to believe that many people, if they could, would try to put themselves and their loved ones in a better environment. So what exactly is it about immigration that many people act as if they don't understand? In the past 5 years, we have seen a lot of attacks on immigrants as a whole and the idea of immigration, said Foliki Olowofoyiku, star of the first American sitcom to feature a Nigerian family. And the fact is, no one willingly wants to leave their home, you know? It is usually something that forces you out of there, and you go on to a new land trying to better yourself in various circumstances. The Nigerian actress and star of the CBS sitcom Bob Hart Abishola, which explores the Nigerian immigrant experience, is the youngest of 20 siblings. Her eldest is in his mid-70s and immigrated to the United States in 2001. Olowofoyiku grew up in Victoria Island, an affluent area that's known as the main financial and business center of Lagos. But at just 18 years old, she moved to the Big Apple with one of her sisters, who's 30 years her senior. What was supposed to be just a summer vacation turned into her enrolling into City College of New York without her family's knowledge or blessing. But the tenacious and self-driven Renaissance woman had big plans and refused to allow anything or anyone to stop her. Her dad, who was a powerful Nigerian politician and attorney, along with her mother, wanted their youngest daughter to pursue law, but she had other plans, and unfortunately for them, they raised a bold, courageous, and independent thinker. It just didn't feel good, said Olowofoyiku, who had big dreams that she refused to ignore. I tried to picture myself in law, which is the family profession and what my parents wanted me to get into, and I just couldn't. Nothing about it appealed to me. My calling was in music and the arts. After receiving her BA with honors in theater, the award-winning actress continued to pursue her love for music and went on to earn a degree in audio engineering from the Institute of Audio Research in New York. The self-taught electric guitarist also loves to sing and plays the piano, something her dad had all of her children trained to do at a young age. I make music, said Olowofoyiku, who has worked with David Bowie and appeared in two of his music videos as his bass guitarist. I released a song last year. I think I released a song some years before that under a different name, the Foliki. But now I'm just going by Foliki on all the music platforms, and I'm working on more music now. When it comes to her path, she believes that if she had more guidance once she arrived in the United States, she may have done things a little differently. I was fighting so many forces and also not knowing how to navigate or learning how to navigate a new continent very much on my own, she explained. So I was really just guided by, okay, this feels right, this feels good, let me keep on exploring this. My guiding force was this divine pull that pushed me towards what it felt like I should be doing. That guiding force was pretty accurate and steered Olowofoyiku in the direction of success. And one thing that she makes clear is that no matter what she decides to pursue, no one will outwork her, much like her character, Abishola, who is also a Nigerian immigrant woman of the Yoruba tribe. Oluwofoyi Ku shows America that foreign-born women and men who come to this country work their asses off, and in doing so contribute far more to the fabric of American culture than Americans want to admit and acknowledge. The timely comedic love story about Bob, a white middle-aged businessman from Detroit who falls for his cardiac nurse, Abishola, a Nigerian immigrant, highlights and brings much-needed laughter and truth to the immigration conversation. It is timely because people need to be reminded that immigrants, in general, are not villains. They are just looking for a better life, explained the actress. And, in fact, we are all immigrants. The second season is back, and if you haven't watched, Oluwofoyi Ku says you are missing a show that's filled with a lot of laughter, a lot of love, and a lot of heart and kindness, and a lot of crazy but in a good way. It is a show that highlights differences, but in the same breath, highlights the fact that even though those differences exist, we all deep down want the same thing, which is love, family, good health, and to be surrounded by people we love. The next article is called Roxane Gay Speaks on Audre Lorde's Literature and Legacy. Roxane Gay is a literary icon. So, what do you get when you combine the author whose best-selling books include Bad Feminist, Hunger and Difficult Women with the revolutionary black feminist Audre Lorde? A masterpiece, that is. Gay recently edited the new anthology, The Selected Works of Audre Lorde, which was released in September and features Lorde's groundbreaking poetry and prose on topics of race, queer identity, feminism, and justice. Among the essays are The Transformation of Silence into Language and Action, and The Master's Tool Will Never Dismantle the Master's House, and I Am Your Sister. The book also includes excerpts from A Burst of Light, which received the 1988 Before Columbus Foundation National Book Award. Gay selected poems from Lorde's 9 volumes, including The Black Unicorn and 1974 National Book Award finalist from A Land Where Other People Live. The acclaimed poet passed away at age 58 on November 17, 1992. In a conversation with Essence, editors Allison McGivna and Joy Marie McKenzie, Gay discusses the selections for the anthology, her own legacy, and when she first fell in love with words. Joy Marie McKenzie of Essence asks the question, how do you go about approaching an artist like Audre trying to put her work together? Roxane Gay responded, I really didn't have a methodology beyond what spoke to me and what I thought would be relevant right now. One of the most incredible things about Audre's work is that she's timeless and she has created work that is still relevant. And it is frustrating that it is still relevant because that means that the world has not changed enough. But she was really impressive, both in her nonfiction and her poetry. And so it was definitely challenging because I was like, let's just put it all in. I still tried to do my best in terms of thinking through what I wanted to include and why. McKenzie asks the question, why was it important for you not only to showcase her prose, but her poetry? Oftentimes, when we think of Audre, it is her essays or the striking speeches that she gives, but not so much her poetry. Why was it important for you to dedicate literally half the book to it? Gay said, well, she's a phenomenal poet, and some of her most profound work is in her poetry. And we all know about The Master's Tool Will Never Dismantle the Master's House and her cancer journals. and her prose gets quite a lot of attention, and deservedly so. But I felt like her poetry deserved equal attention, and when the project came to me, they were very much interested in collecting her entire body of work instead of one or the other. Allison asked the question, do you feel sometimes like you have to live up to a legacy that you have created, sort of similar to what I'm sure Audrey felt in her life as well? Gay said, I certainly feel pressure, but I don't think it's because of legacy, because I'm not there yet. Instead, I feel pressure because all too often for Black creators, we don't get multiple chances, and so you have to be great every single time. Otherwise, no other Black people will ever get that opportunity again. And it's deeply unfair, but it is the world we live in. And so the pressure is, please don't let me fudge this up. Please don't let me fudge this up. Let me be a bridge, not a door. And that's the challenge. And I suspect that I am harder on myself than I need to be. But I think most ambitious people are. And so I try to manage it the best I can. Mitjivna asked the question, if someone were going to create an anthology of your work, do you have pieces now that you are like, these are the pieces that absolutely have to be inside that anthology? Gay replied, that's a great question. Yeah, I have pieces of mine that I think have held up fairly well. And so I wrote an essay several years ago called The Price of Black Ambition that I think is something that I would include. And my piece about trigger warnings and bad feminists, I think really holds up well and keeps coming up again and again as we have these cultural discussions about how do we protect people while also telling stories that we want to tell in the ways we want to tell them. So I would definitely start with those two pieces. Mitjivna said, at what point in your life do you fall in love with words and prose and just know that this was what you needed to do? Gay replied, I fell in love with writing very early. I started writing at 4 years old. I would draw these villages on napkins and then write stories about the people who lived in that village. And I have no idea why I used paper napkins as my medium, but I just loved the idea that I could make things up. And as I got older and learned how to read, I became an avid reader because I'm actually pretty shy in my life, and books were an escape. And I just loved losing myself in a story. It helped me distract myself from reality. And I love not only when I am distracted, but when I was distracted in a beautiful way. And I still am. I still enjoy a compelling story, but I enjoy it even more when a writer has arranged their sentences in ways that really inspire me, or make me jealous, or make me wonder, how did they do that? The next article is titled, Ask a Gynecologist, Can You Really Get Pregnant from Pre-Ejaculate? Finally, we are bringing you very public answers to some of your most private questions. When sexual and vaginal health concerns arise, OBGYN and nationally known women's health expert Dr. Jessica Shepherd wants to ensure you have the answers you need to feel at ease. As the founder of Her Viewpoint, an online women's health forum, she uses this outlet to focus on addressing taboo topics in a comfortable setting. Prepare to take notes. Question: it is not possible to get pregnant from pre-ejaculate, is it? The answer to that question is definitely yes. Pre-cum does have sperm in it, so yes. It may not have the full amount of what you may see in a full ejaculation amount of fluid, but it does have semen. That's why it is so important for people to understand that And that's why the pullout method is not 100%. And it is not going to guarantee that you're not going to get pregnant with the withdrawal method. It is really important for women and their partners to understand that there are millions of sperm in pre-cum. There is only one way that you can say, oh, I'm not going to get pregnant. And that is if you don't have sex or if you properly use a condom or other safe and proper methods of birth control. The next article is called Real Housewives of Potomac star Monique Samuels files counter-assault charges against co-star Candace Dillard. Real Housewives of Potomac star Monique Samuels is taking legal action against her co-star Candace Dillard, a move that came nearly a week after Dillard filed assault charges against Samuels. Apparently, Bravo cameras were rolling as they were filming the fifth season of the hit franchise series. Other Real Housewives of Potomac co-stars were present. Apparently, Bravo cameras were rolling as they were filming the fifth season of the hit franchise series. Other Real Housewives of Potomac co-stars were present. Last week, Samuels was charged with second-degree assault after allegedly getting into a fight with Dillard. Dillard then filed a complaint with the District Court of Montgomery County in Maryland. Court documents show that Samuels has been summoned to court on December 23rd. Once initial charges were filed, a lawyer for Samuels, A. Scott Bolden, said in a statement, "To be sure, my client did nothing but defend herself in the face of more aggressive behavior by Ms. Dillard. If this event occurred during the taping of the show, I am confident that the video will bear all of this out." Dillard's attorney, James L. Walker Jr., responded to the latest charges in a statement to E! News, saying, "I did not know innocent people filed counterclaims as a strategic move after we all know they have been charged and caught on video threatening and attacking our clients. We gladly welcome seeing Ms. Samuels in court. We pray she is presently getting some type of treatment for anger management." He continued, "The video is very clear, and my client and I have confirmed with the network that Mrs. Samuels was clearly the aggressor. We will also explore asking the court for sanctions for Mrs. Samuels' frivolous filing. You assaulted Mrs. Candace Dillard Bassett. Now face the music." Essence reached out to Bravo, but didn't immediately hear back. According to E! News, Dillard is now facing second-degree assault charges from the District Court of Montgomery County in Maryland. The reality star was hit with a summons and is expected to appear in court on February 6th. The alleged incident happened at a dinner on October 16th, which Samuels grabbed Dillard by the hair and pulled her down. The next article is titled, "Election 2020 is not over yet. Focus turns to Georgia. Black women shaped the course and outcome of the 2020 U.S. presidential election. Had it not been for Black women voting, mobilizing, organizing, and strategizing, this nation could very well be facing four more years of Donald Trump. The same can be said in Georgia. For the first time since 1992, the Peach State turned blue, led by scores of Black and brown organizers. Now that determination is focused on two Senate runoff races that will change the state of the nation for the next 2 years. While the Democratic Party managed to hold onto the House, control of the Senate could come down to two Georgia races, GOP Senator David Perdue facing off against Democratic challenger John Ossoff and GOP Senator Kelly Loeffler against Democratic candidate Reverend Raphael Warnock, senior pastor of the historic Ebenezer Baptist Church in Atlanta. The Senate is now deadlocked at 48-48, with 51 seats needed to form a simple majority. To form a supermajority, which allows the majority party to bypass the Senate filibuster and pass a bill, 60 seats are needed. Ossoff told The Hill, "For Vice President Biden to prevail, appear after what has been a decade of organizing and voter registration. A lot of this work led by Stacey Abrams and these huge battles, some won, some lost, we have had in Georgia over the last 10 years and now have two Senate runoffs for Senate control with so much at stake. With this virus still raging out of control, with an urgent need to get economic and financial relief to families in my state and across the country, we have the wind at our backs and a great sense of promise and opportunity here. Now is the time for the real work to begin, and communities of color must be at the table, not an afterthought, because we are more than our vote. NSEU Fought, CEO of the New Georgia Project, said, "The New Georgia Project and its allies have registered 800,000 people to vote since 2018, and 49% of them are people of color. We will continue to be a trusted messenger and communicate the power we have as voters to flip the power in the United States Senate," You Fought continued. More than 1 million black voters cast their ballot early in the state, surpassing 2016 numbers. Georgia has also seen a surge in young black voter registration and turnout. We are standing on the shoulders of Dr. Martin Luther King, Congressman John Lewis, Joseph E. Lowery, Maynard Jackson, Andrew Young, Coretta Scott King, Ella Josephine Baker, Ruby Parks Blackburn, and more, Cliff Albright and Latasha Brown, co-founders of Black Voters Matter, said in a statement. "Don't count us out," the movement leaders continued. "We have more work to do in the South, for sure, but the margins are narrowing. The tide is turning. The motivation for better, progressive leadership is growing. Georgia is at the epicenter of this country right now, and we are claiming victory." To donate to the organizations on the ground in Georgia, check out the Movement Voter Project, which works to strengthen progressive power at all levels of government by helping donors, big and small, support the best and most promising local community-based organizations in key states with a focus on youth and communities of color. The next article is titled, "Symone Sanders May Become First Black Woman to Serve as White House Press Secretary." Television commentator and former senior advisor to the Biden-Harris campaign, Symone Sanders is being considered for the position of White House Press Secretary in the Biden administration. Sanders and long-term Biden aide Kate Bedingfield are both said to be on the inside track, quote unquote, to becoming the next White House Press Secretary, along with a number of other women, according to Axios. Since the Trump administration went through four different press secretaries, some of which upheld, dismissed conspiracy theories and attacks on journalists, officials are saying this is an important decision for Biden to make. On November 14th, John Lockhart, the former press secretary under Bill Clinton, wrote for CNN that whoever serves at the podium next will be tasked with restoring trust for the American people, because the Trump administration promised the truth and delivered everything but. President-elect Biden has been lauded as one of the most progressive candidates the U.S. has seen, as he selected the first woman and person of color to serve as the vice president, Kamala Harris. He could make history again by choosing Sanders to be the first black woman at the podium. After working as national press secretary for Senator Bernie Sanders, Sanders then moved to CNN as a commentator who candidly shared the black community stances on pressing issues during President Trump's administration. The next article is titled, "Black Travelers Spent More Than $100 Billion on Travel in 2019. Black folks were out here in 2019. In between taking over politics, sports, entertainment, and more, the black community collectively found time to enjoy leisure travel in 2019 when outside was, quote-unquote, still open, and the numbers prove it. MMGY Travel Intelligence released results from the first phase of the Black Traveler Insights, Opportunities, and Priorities Report, revealing that Black U.S. leisure travelers accounted for $109.4 billion in travel spending in 2019, which was generated by 458.2 million traveler stays, or 13.1% of the U.S. leisure travel market. The study analyzed approximately 4,800 U.S. Black leisure travelers and 200 members of the National Coalition of Black Meeting Professionals, NCBMP. We have long suspected the amount that U.S. Black travelers spend on leisure travel was undervalued, Black Travel Alliance President Martinique Lewis said in a statement. These findings of the U.S. market will become our calling card to destination management organizations and travel brands as we work to increase Black representation at all levels of the travel industry. Other findings include that in 2019, Black leisure travelers took an average of 3 overnight vacations with a stay of 2.5 nights for each trip and spent about $600 on each overnight stay. A second and final phase of MMGY's Black Traveler Insights, Opportunities, and Priorities Report is set to be released in January. It will take a closer look at the vacation planning process and experiences that Black leisure travelers encounter across a variety of international markets. Wow, imagine if the travel industry actually valued our Black dollars. The next article is titled, Megan Thee Stallion in the Running for 4 Grammy Awards. 2020 has proven to be a great year for the young star, Megan Thee Stallion, as she snags 4 Grammy nominations ahead of the 2021 show. This year marks the first time she has ever been nominated for the prestigious award. She released her debut album, Good News, on November 20th. The Savage rapper is Grammy nominated for Best New Artist, Record of the Year, Best Rap Performance, and Best Rap Song. In the song categories listed, she is nominated for her 2020 remix of Savage, featuring Beyoncé. The Savage remix climbed to the top of the Billboard Hot 100 in early May and was included on Megan's aforementioned album. Megan has had an incredible rise this year and continues to blaze a trail for young women in rap. Over the course of the past 4 years, she has proven to be one of the most determined young artists in entertainment. After releasing a number of memorable singles, freestyles, and mixtapes, including Tina Snow, Fever, and Sugar, her international acclaim began to mount, and her hustle-hard attitude helped her become an artist to watch. She has since been co-signed by fan favorites such as Jay-Z, Beyoncé, and Missy Elliott. Additionally, Megan recently made headlines due to a collaboration with Cardi B, WAP, which also hit the top spot on the Billboard Hot 100. We have run out of time for today's episode of Essence. We hope you enjoyed it and be sure to listen next time. I am Ava Lewis, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Essence is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.